Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. This hour on the show, the Columbus Symphony Orchestra back in action. First appearances in late October accompanying Opera Columbus. The official symphony season opens in January. Symphony managements and musicians recently agreed to a three-year contract which retained all of the full-time musicians, but it reduced salaries and benefits, and with a shortened concert season, we'll find out more about the efforts that saved the Columbus Symphony Orchestra. Both musicians and management joining us in the studio this hour, Robert Buzz Trafford, Chair of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra Board of Trustees. Welcome.
Good morning.
Tony Beadle, Executive Director of the Symphony. Good to have you here as well.
Thanks, Fred.
Doug Fisher, Second Bassoon of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra, President of the Central Ohio Federation of Musicians, Local 103, American Federation of Musicians. Welcome back.
Good morning, Fred.
And Jim Akins, Principal Tuba and Chair of the Orchestra Committee. Good to have you here.
Good morning.
And you call us at 614-292-8513. So I imagine, and maybe you'd like to comment, that this must have been a pretty difficult and painful process for everybody.
Absolutely.
That's Jim, putting it mildly.
That's putting it mildly, Buzz. And Jim, what's the story?
Well, it's certainly a difficult situation anytime there's any kind of a dispute on this level, but we're happy to have it behind us at this point.
Mm-hmm. Buzz, your thoughts?
You know, it's been very difficult, I think, not only for the musicians and for management, but for the community. And I think all of us, musicians, management, the community, are very happy to have it behind
us. Mm-hmm. Okay. By the way, 614-292-8513 if you'd like to call us and email comments to openline at WOSU.org. What are the terms of the agreement now, so that the listeners might know? All musicians, all full-time musicians retained, and because the original proposal was to cut the orchestra way back, which nobody wanted to do, but it looked like it might be necessary. So how many full-time musicians, and what are the terms?
Well, that's an important point. We have retained 53 full-time positions, and that was important to the musicians. It's different than where we began in January, but they persuaded us that that was the right way to go, and that's what we've been able to do. One of the consequences of that, and I think it's a tribute to the way they view each other and stick together, but one of the consequences of that is that there'll be slightly, lower compensation on a weekly basis by about $90 in the first year and then decreasing in years two and three, and reductions in the number of weeks from 46 to 38 weeks is the other principal source of reductions in compensation under the contract.
Tony Beadle, have you also lost some positions in management? Or what about cutbacks in management?
Yes, actually, when the crisis ensued, some staff decided that they were not able to stay. And then as the crisis deepened, we were forced to make staff layoffs because there was really nothing for the people to do who are involved in producing concerts and in some other functions in the office.
Mm-hmm. Is there a reduced number of managers now, I mean, in total?
Right now we have a staff of about 7 people.
And you had before?
Over 20.
Over 20. Now, do you plan to build back up again or
yes,
over time? Or?
Yes. And, because we're starting off from very limited resources, we're building in a sort of a two-month framework between now and January, though I doubt it will not still be near what we had before.
And have managers also had to take salary cuts?
Yes, 20%.
20% across the board?
Mm-hmm.
Yourself included?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And Fred, I think it's worth noting that while we had between 20 and 25 staff members in April of 2008, if you dialed the clock back 4 or 5 years, we would have had as many as 40 to 45 staff members.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, what's the fate of your music director, Junichi Hirokami? He has a year left on his contract. Am I right about that?
He does have a year left on the contract. You know, Junichi and Junichi's role in the orchestra was not a part of this agreement and really wasn't discussed after the summer. What Junichi's role will be is a subject of discussion with Junichi's agent. One of the problems we have is that because of the time it took to resolve this, we had a moving target in terms of what our program would be in 08-09. And although we had a tentative 08-09 schedule, we've now had to move those dates. And, of course, Maestro Hirokami has commitments in Japan and other places. And so conversations are taking place to see which dates he's available that we're performing on and whether it makes sense for him to try to continue in that role. And so mm-hmm. that all remains to be resolved.
Has he indicated any willingness or desire to continue? Do we know where he stands on this?
Well, you know, most of our conversations actually are through his agents on issues like this. Mm-hmm. And he has both an American agent and Japanese agents. And frankly, it's a two-step process when those conversations take place.
He was publicly very critical of the board of trustees, and he criticized their fundraising efforts, or as he termed it, their lack of fundraising efforts. Is there any loss of faith in the maestro by the board? I mean, would you like to see him go?
Well, I don't think it's a question of liking to see him go. I mean, I think the board and the musicians share a common respect for Maestro Hirakami's skills at the podium. I think whether he would be a constructive in other roles that the music director has to play, including fundraising himself, mm-hmm. is a reasonable question. And there have emerged over the course of the relationship questions about whether it works as well as we had hoped at the beginning in this sense, Fred. One of our board members, I think, captured it, and it's appropriate that we use this analogy on WOSU. Someone said, you know, Gordon Gee is as good as they get as a university president.
Mm-hmm.
But how effective would he be if he lived in a country 6,000 or 7,000 miles away and visited 10 weeks a year? And we had
hoped that was the original contract. That's what you all agreed upon.
Question about it. No doubt about it. And it hasn't worked as effectively as we had hoped.
Mm-hmm. So is there also a loss of faith because of his public criticism of the board?
You know, I don't view it as a loss of faith. I think there's a question about effectiveness in some segments of our community who might understandably have taken some issue with some of his comments.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, you know, the orchestra family is a big family, and it doesn't all think alike. And we certainly learned that over the course of the last 9 months. It's important to try to do what is best for the whole family and not just one segment. And so we need to be sensitive to the strength of feelings in some parts of that community.
Mm-hmm. Doug Fisher, Jim Akins, let me ask you about getting back to work and how you feel about that. Principal oboist Steve Seacan told the Columbus Dispatch, he said, symphony musicians operate at stress levels that air traffic controllers deal with. So, number one, how do you feel about getting back to work? Number two, I'm curious about the stress for symphony orchestra members in the best of times.
Well, it's true that it is a very stressful profession. You know, imagine doing your work in the public eye, where you have one crack only, and you can't make it. If you make a mistake, you can't take it back.
Mm-hmm.
And so that creates the kind of stress that I think Steve is referring to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're on stage in concert and you're playing alone, you know, you have one shot at it, and if you mess it up, you can't take it back.
Have you ever messed it up?
Oh, I never mess things up. Right?
Never, huh? You're perfect. Okay.
Hopefully the tape archives aren't there anymore. Right?
Yeah, right.
No, it's a very stressful position if you so many notes are flying by, and if you miss anyone, especially in solo positions such as any of the winds and brass, it's very obvious when I make a mistake or when a trumpet makes a mistake. So it's that's the stress level they were mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of very few professions where as close to perfection is expected at every performance. So, but on the other hand, that's something that we really relish, and that goal is what makes it so much fun. It is the hard that makes it so good. So that's why we do this.
And in spite of you know, what's happened with the orchestra economically in recent times and going forward, it doesn't matter to us as musicians. We perform at a very high level no matter what we're paid or under any circumstances. You know, professional musicians always make their best effort, and I expect that will be the case with the Columbus Symphony, and I expect the orchestra's quality to remain high.
Mm-hmm. Well, are you happy with the contract? I mean, you're back at work, but you had to take a big salary cut and cuts in benefits as well.
Well, I don't know that happy is the right word. We are looking forward to the future, and this gives us an opportunity to have a future, and so hopefully the community, the corporate world, the community at large, and all of us collectively can work towards growing this orchestra into the future again.
When you say growing it, what would you like to see happen?
Well down the road, I'd like to see this city have a full-time, complete full-time orchestra at the national level that many other communities do have in similar-sized cities.
What's the difference between that and what you have now?
Well, it's a growth period. We're in a period where we have to, whatever the reasons for correction did occur, they did occur. So we now have to work together to see if we can pick up all the pieces and begin to work together to get the word of what we can do for this community. It's such a positive statement that classical music makes for any community, and we need to get that word back out to the city of Columbus, because mm-hmm. it certainly deserves a very fine orchestra.
We also hope very much for an endowment, because a part of the reason why we found ourselves in these difficulties is because, unlike many large orchestras in the United States, we lacked a deep endowment to act as a buffer mm-hmm. For the downtimes. And so I think building an endowment fund that's independent and solely for the orchestra is a critical long-term goal.
Absolutely.
Obviously, the way the economy looks today, one can ask, how can we possibly achieve that? But it certainly can be achievable at some point in the future.
I'm a little confused about what sort of endowment, if you do have one, that the orchestra has now. How does that work?
Well, presently the orchestra benefits from an endowment established some 15 or 20 years ago, part of the vision of the corporate community at that time, called the Trilogy Fund, which is housed and managed at the Columbus Foundation. Our share of that is, depending on the market, between $15 and $17 million, which is nice, but nowhere near as much as we'd like to have. We really ought to have an endowment significantly larger than that. And that is a shared long-term goal of the musicians and the board and management.
Mm-hmm. What size endowment? I mean, ideally, at a minimum, would you like to see?
Usually it's 2 to 3 times the operating budget. So we would have said, anywhere from $35 to $50 million.
Mm-hmm. At a minimum. Huh?
At a minimum.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Is it going to be a while before, in other words, I think one of your trustees made the remark that it might be a few years while the community watches the orchestra to make sure that it lives within its means and gains a trust in their financial capability before you'd be able to really have an effective endowment campaign. Is that, you're shaking your heads, yes, does that sound right?
Yes. Essentially, you have to have the best endowment plans are successful when you have a strong case for stable operations and you've been able to communicate easily and ably the value of the orchestra as an artistic entity, as a quality of life addition, and an economic driver as well. Mm-hmm. So those we have a little work to do in those areas, especially in the operating stability department after this.
So you feel you have a little something you have to show to the community or prove to the community?
Well, an endowment, anyone who contributes to an endowment fund is making a long-term investment, and I think they need to be comfortable that there's long-term viability and sustainability.
Mm-hmm. We're at 614-292-8513 here with management and musicians for the Columbus Symphony, which is back on the boards. Buzz Trafford, chair of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra Board of Trustees, Tony Beadle, executive director of the Symphony, Doug Fisher, second bassoon and president of the local musicians union, Jim Akins, principal tuba and chair of the orchestra committee. Your questions and comments at 614-292-8513. Open line at WOSU.org for your emails. And Bob is on the line. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Fred. Last weekend, I heard about a wonderful fundraising event out at Les Wexner's house, and it was for a group known as the Columbus Coalition Against Violence Against Families. And one of the things that was reported was that Mr. Wexner and this group were able to raise $15 million.
Hmm.
Last weekend.
All right.
Okay.
So you're saying, where's all that money raising for the symphony?
Weekend. And a few years ago, there was a fundraising event for the very fine Columbus Museum of Art, over $80 million.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, and my suggestion would be, that if the Columbus Symphony Board of Trustees can't raise $15 million in 1 year, they should resign their positions. And I would suggest that they get a hold of these various peoples and maybe even take a trip up Route 23 to Findlay, Ohio, visit Marathon Oil, which I, you know, might have a dollar or two around the area, to suggest greater corporate donations from, particularly if Columbus corporations are tired of giving, perhaps we could try some larger corporations.
Well, Bob, hang on the line. Hang on the line. There's a challenge for you, Buzz Trafford and the Board of Trustees. How come you can't raise $15 million in a weekend, says the caller?
Well, I appreciate Bob's frustration. The museum hasn't yet raised $80 million, although that is their goal. And I'm not sure that the event that the Wexners raised $15 million, if it did, that's terrific. Certainly the Center for the Coalition Against Family Violence is a wonderful cause and an important one in our community. Let me say this. The board is keenly aware of the importance of its role in fundraising. And it has certainly received a lot of criticism. In fact, many believe that the whole problem here is that the board has not done an adequate job fundraising. I can tell you from having worked with the board members for, well, 9 years now in my case, that they take that role seriously and they've worked very hard at it. It's not as easy as some people think. And, we have made lots of overtures to large corporations without success in many instances. And what we really hope here is that by with the sacrifices the musicians have made, with the demonstration of commitment to fiscal responsibility that the board and management have shown by sticking through this process, that we will inspire the confidence of new and additional donors. And to be real honest with Bob, I don't expect that we will raise $15 million over the next year. But we're going to work very, very hard to raise enough money to return the orchestra to solid financial footing. And I might add that Mr. Wexner's companies have been among the largest supporters of our symphony, and we ought to be grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, too, that Bob's observation points out the fact that for all of us that work in the arts, that the daily ongoing challenge to be able to advocate for the importance of the arts again is a bigger enough challenge, but the other part of it is all the other societal needs that arise and for whom we vie for attention and support.
Bob, one quick follow-up?
Yes, I'd really like to see all I can say is, the definition of insanity happens to be if expecting different results by doing the same exact thing over and over again. And all I'm suggesting is that with the size of Columbus, being the largest city in the state and having a number of insurance companies amongst other entities around, I know that Cleveland and Cincinnati have long-term art support, but there has to be a vision.
Okay.
Not just a vision, but people going to work. I mean, at least.
Okay, Bob. Quick follow-up. Okay, I think we have your point. Thanks so much for calling. Ann Melvin, one of your trustees, told the Columbus Dispatch that she said, "quote the leadership in the community in the past had an arts orientation, but I don't think it's a high priority now." What do you think?
I think
she's
that's
right.
That could be true in any city, but I think that one events of the last few months have shown that there are an awful lot of people in this town that do care about the symphony. It may not have been under the most positive circumstances that they emerged because of our troubles, but those people are there and they're still there. And I think that our challenge is to find the best way to tap those people and to get them to come to our concerts and be subscribers and donate.
Did you feel a lot of support from the community? I mean, in some senses, it seemed, I know you had benefit concerts and,
right.
and well-attended, but sometimes there seemed to be an awful air of silence hanging over the whole process.
Well, I think the silence is that people didn't really know what to do or how to do anything, but now that there is a connection and everything is moving forward, perhaps we can get those people to rejoin the family here and begin to encourage them to come to concerts on a regular basis, not just when we're in trouble, and hopefully we can get the word out to them of what these concerts are, and so that they can be excited about the music that we've chosen for them. Along those lines, last year in April, we did a live recording thanks to the generosity of Gene D'Angelo, and that that has been mastered and mixed and is ready for will be ready for release hopefully in mid-November. So we'll have a live recording of Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet and Fifth Symphony. And I've heard that, and it's an amazing product. I think the city will be not just excited to have something from Columbus, but this is an international level recording, and mm-hmm. I think it'll do very
what
well.
What does it mean international level, that means?
Oh, it's if you listen to it, you'll just guess which orchestra it is. You could guess it's Chicago. You could guess it's Cleveland.
Really?
You could guess it's Columbus. Mm-hmm. It's a very fine recording.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good to know. Another community leader, Jack Kessler, told the Dispatch, I think we're a symphony town, but they've got to market it better. Where does your marketing fall short, if it does?
Marketing falls short when there's not the resources to market in the best possible way that you would like to be doing. We set aside a dollar amount for the concerts. You know, this everybody can be a pundit about marketing. You know, so if you don't see an ad on Sunday, you happen not to see it, you don't think we're doing our job. The fact of the matter is that our attendance was up over 20% this past year alone. So we must have been doing something right, but that doesn't mean that there's a lot more to be done.
Mm-hmm. When you look at how symphony – yes, Buzz, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, Christopher Purdy had Michael Kaiser on a couple of weeks ago on WLSU, and you know, he emphasized the importance of marketing, and we recognize the importance of marketing.
Tell us who Michael Kaiser is.
Well, Michael Kaiser presently is the executive director at the Kennedy Center in Washington. Mm-hmm. He's written a book about how to turn arts organizations around, and he's known as a turnaround artist in the context of arts organizations, and particularly music and ballet. And he emphasized the importance of marketing. I think we took steps last year, and actually Ann Melvin specifically funded them. In addition to the wonderful support she provides generally, she wanted the symphony to update its brand and its image, and we worked with Ology, which is one of the great branding firms here in Columbus that does work for a lot of the corporations we all know. And frankly, that's where you saw the new look and feel for the Columbus Symphony. And so we have been working on marketing. We need to do more. I think one of the things that we've learned something about through this controversy is there are better things we can do by way of the internet. I think that there were groups, whether it's Symphony Strong or Symphony Columbus and some of the things Jim Akins has encouraged us to do in the past, I think we've seen that putting together some of those networks can be helpful. I hope that we can bring all of those under the umbrella of our symphony and do a better job marketing. We try hard at it. I think we do a decent job. We would never say that we don't want to do better.
Mm-hmm. Columbus Symphony Orchestra management and musicians are with us this hour. We're going to pause for these messages. Then back, and with you callers as well, at WOSU 820 NPR News.
Bailout dies in the House. Palin and Biden get ready for debate, and Obama gets a boost in the polls. I'm Neil Conan with just over a month to go. What do the candidates need to do now? How to win this election? Political junkie Ken Rudin at the Newseum, plus your calls. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins later this afternoon. It starts at 2 o'clock. Right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning, I'm Amy Jurevich. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning. Our fall membership drive begins in just about 2 weeks, and our goal is to raise the money needed to support the programs you value. Every dollar raised before the start of our membership drive will count toward the Member Challenge Fund. Make a pledge before the drive, and your gift will be used to challenge other WOSU listeners to donate during our membership drive. And on Thursday morning, we'll announce an exciting sweepstakes for WOSU supporters. Keep listening to WOSU for more details. And taking a look at the weather forecast for today, mostly cloudy skies and a chance of rain off and on throughout the day, a high of 63. Mostly cloudy tonight, a chance of rain early in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy after midnight, and a low of 42. For Thursday, partly sunny, but a little cooler, a high around 60 for Thursday. Currently 56 degrees in downtown Columbus. And now, back to Open Line.
Welcome back to Open Line, WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. As you know now, the Columbus Symphony Orchestra back in action. First appearances in late October, accompanying Opera Columbus. Some holiday concerts in December we'll tell you about, and the official symphony season opens in January. Symphony management and musicians agreed to a three-year contract, which retained all the full-time musicians, but it reduced salaries and benefits, also reduced salaries for management as well, and a shortened concert season. Joining us in the studio, Jim Akins, principal tuba for the orchestra, chair of the orchestra committee. Doug Fisher is second bassoon of the orchestra, president of the Central Ohio Federation of Musicians, Local 103, American Federation of Musicians. Tony Beadle, executive director of the symphony. Robert Buzz Trafford, chair of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra Board of Trustees. Call us, how about you? Were you sorry to see the symphony go when it left, and are you happy to see it back? 614-292-8513. Open line at WOSU.org for your emails. Rita's on the line. Hi, Rita.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Under the other conductor, Alessandro Siciliani, the symphony was solvent, more than solvent, took the symphony to Carnegie Hall. What was the difference in the fundraising then compared to now?
It would be, I was not here in the Alessandro era. I would say that environmental factors outside the role of the music director was substantially different in terms of the corporate support of the orchestra, and that might have been a factor. I think that the opportunity to go to Carnegie Hall was in and itself seemed to be a very good thing for Columbus. It's not to say the music director shouldn't be involved in funding and being an advocate for the orchestra, but I think there were a lot of different factors in the city itself. That would be my off-the-cuff viewpoint on that.
Well, there are a couple of other things that I think do play into it. I mean, when you talk about environmental factors, I think it's important to recognize that after the turn of this century, as we moved into the 2000s, there was a downturn in support for orchestras nationally. And indeed, half a dozen orchestras failed in the first 5 years of this decade. And so there was a reduction in support. Some of it is tied back to 9/11. Some of it is tied back to a setback in the markets that occurred after the dot-com bubble. I mean, here we are, Fred, back talking about economics again. Mm-hmm. I know you're trying to get away from that. But it very much affects funding for orchestras. The other thing is that you know, we were the beneficiaries in the late 90s of a spectacular gala involving Luciano Pavarotti. And you know, we are not often able to fill the Schottenstein Center for the benefit of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra, and so that was certainly a wonderful event that helped us. I also have to say we're talking about a fairly narrow window of balanced budget and even small surplus in that period. And one of the things that we've had to do is look over a longer period of time and look at the ebbs and flows of our funding.
Mm-hmm. Rita, do you have one follow-up? It doesn't. Okay, let's go on to Gordon. Hello, Gordon.
Oh, hi. My wife and I have lived in, our family has lived in Columbus since 1974, and I've just been so impressed at the growth of the symphony over that time, from an orchestra that could barely hold its own with a kind of star visiting guest artist to one that is just splendid. And we really regretted the departure of Siciliani, but I think it made us more aware to see how the orchestra performed during that period of transition, of just how much, you know, how important the musicians are, and this core of wonderful musicians is to the symphony. And I've been disturbed, and I don't really know, have any ideas about fundraising. But I've been disturbed in so many of the comments that the you know, Mr. Trafford and Beadle made during this period, that the musicians seem to be the expendable part of the orchestra. That, well, cut them, cut their salaries, get rid of the maestro, there didn't seem to be a sufficient appreciation for what an important treasure we have, that everything possible should be done to preserve it.
All right, Gordon, hang on the line. Let's get a response, Buzz.
Yeah, well, if you interpreted our comments that way, they certainly were resonating with you in a way that I think we intended them. We have always very highly valued our musicians. The bulk of the work that we do is devoted to trying to raise money so that we can compensate them as highly as we possibly can. The original plan to reduce the number of full-time musicians really was an effort to avoid reducing the weekly salary for any musician or for any of the full-time musicians. And it was not something ultimately that the musicians embraced, but it was intended actually to try to protect a core of musicians. So it wasn't intended to treat them as expendable pieces of the orchestra at all. The other thing is that all of the focus has been on the cost-cutting of the musician compensation portion of the budget, because that's what has been the public controversy. The reality is that the cost-cutting is greater in other portions of the budget than in that portion. But, you know, that's something we can do without negotiating and without the controversy that we've had. So it is simply not the case that either the board or management doesn't have tremendous regard for the musicians. And it has – I can tell you that at the board meetings there was great sympathy for the situation in which the musicians found themselves. But, you know, we had to deal with a financial reality, and it really is true that our choice wasn't between not reducing musician compensation and reducing it. It was between reducing it and having no musician compensation and no orchestra.
Gordon, one quick follow-up. Go ahead.
No, I just hope that that is always kept foremost in mind, because when I hear talk about the broader symphony community, I get the feeling that the symphony is a – you know, I just don't like the feeling that the symphony is some sort of nebulous – administrators, community, the wealthy contributors, and that the musicians are sort of replaceable parts. But I appreciate your affirming your value for them.
Gordon, thanks very much. 614-292-8513, talking about the Columbus Symphony with managers and orchestra members. Did we lose some fine musicians over the hall here? In other words, have some left and taken jobs other places?
Yes, yes, we did lose a core of about five or six players, something like that. So it's very, very painful to suffer those losses. We lost some title chair players, principal mm-hmm. players, very important players in this orchestra who've been here for many, many years. So that is a deep loss.
What's the – yes, Doug.
But our hope is that, in the next few years, if the support for the symphony strengthens, that those musicians will return.
What is the process now for replacing those musicians? How do you go about that?
Well, typically there's an audition process, and one of the things that the master agreement that we just are about to sign allows us to do is to hold off on that process and fill the positions as a savings opportunity. It can be placed temporarily, but we will wait a while until we audition for those positions. The other thing is that it could well be that those people, some of them will return to Columbus because they have the ability to come back after a year.
So in other words, you're going to have some temporary positions for a while as a cost-saving measure. When would you start auditioning for permanent positions for those slots?
It's hard to say right now. There are a number of factors that have to come together in the audition process. I mean, that's worth a show on its own in terms of the thoroughness and complexity of that process. So that's to be determined. But I do mm-hmm. know that it's allowed us to have a breather in the coming season in order to replace it. And this is, by the way, something that's keeping positions are open for a while. They don't get replaced in 2 weeks. Depending on the schedule of the audition and everything, it can take 6 to 12 months. So it's while it's unusual in this case that we've been allowed this opportunity to sort of, you know, put it in the back of the line for a little bit. We don't want to put it back in the line. We want to get the best players in the job. But It happens.
Additionally, since we're beginning the season in the middle of a season, it's close to impossible to activate an audition process. A bare minimum is 3 to 4 months before that process could occur. So at that point, would be finished with this season anyway. So the reality is that's why the temporary replacements mm-hmm. make sense for now.
Where do you find those temporary people of such a quality?
We do have our own substitute lists, mm-hmm. and we'll obviously work through that in conjunction with the musical staff and go through the union processes too.
And mm-hmm. also promotions from within. People who are in the orchestra now will possibly move up to those vacant chairs.
How many people typically audition for a particular?
Well, it can vary depending on the situation. I know the principal trumpet position, I believe there were about 75 people from all over the country came for that position.
Wow. So. But there are over 200 resumes typically for any position we mm-hmm. have.
We have an email here from Brian. He says, perhaps the problem is one not unlike the current financial crisis. The message is not being delivered properly, he suggests. In the spirit of, quote, spending a little to make a lot, couldn't the orchestra schedule performances for specific groups in specific areas that haven't had an opportunity to experience a CSO event, like targeted school districts and otherwise not readily thought of venues for symphony performances? What about that?
Well, I think under the circumstances of our normal home of the Ohio Theater, I know there have been some dates that have already been booked for other events, so we will be experiencing some new venues, and perhaps we'll identify some that will be very successful. We were very pleased with our benefit concerts this summer at Veterans Memorial. We had a wonderful time playing there, and the staff was just wonderful to work with, so hopefully we'll find some new venues around town and could reach those new audiences.
Mm-hmm. And yes, Doug, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Fred, we do reach out more than a lot of people realize and try to get out to other communities and out to other school systems. So mm-hmm. we do more of that than probably a lot of people.
Yeah, my dream for the symphony would be the second part of the email is indeed to go on a tour of Central Ohio and visit all those small towns and schools and have our musicians play. But it's never a free ride, and you know we have other business to tend to in the short term, but I think that's a wonderful goal to strive for.
And Tom is our next caller. Hello, Tom.
Hello, how you doing?
We're doing fine.
Good. Say, don't get me wrong now, I've been a concert goer for the CSO for years. I'm a big fan. But I've often wondered what would it take and has that group considered broadening the appeal to another audience by going with a POPs program on a regular basis, like you see in Cincinnati or Boston, which I understand are quite successful.
Well, we do have a POP series.
And I'll take my comments. Well, I mean, a regular POP series like Arthur Fiedler used to do.
Well, okay.
And I'll take my comments on the radio. Thank you.
We do have a six in a full year. We would have a six concert pop series, and I think as close as you get to pops and more would be our picnic with the pops every summer on the lawns of Chemical Abstract. So I'm not sure if he's thinking of something of five nights a week like the Boston Pops. I'm not sure the city is large enough to absorb that many concerts.
Mm-hmm. Well, the six concerts you mentioned actually are 12 as their repeat
concerts. That's right.
There's concerts,
two performances of each concert.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the December schedule and the January new season. What do you need to know here?
Sure. Well, we go on in actually the orchestra begins playing in October for Opera Columbus, the Pearl Fishers. They're in the pit, and that's a wonderful way to return. And I know the opera is thrilled to have them back, and it's the 25th and 27th. But then we go back as the Columbus Symphony. December 5, 6, and 7 with three performances of our Holiday Pops. It's our 25th anniversary of that concert, and its founder and conductor Ron Jenkins will be on board. And Santa and all the bells and whistles of the season are there. And immediately after that, the orchestra goes for a little over 2 weeks, I guess, in the time frame of the Nutcracker in the traditional role with the orchestra there. And then on January 10th, at Veterans Auditorium, we are doing our opening of what was to be in September, the opening concert which is a performance of The Planets, a piece by Gustav Holst, very popular. And we have a special video and narration that goes along with the piece this time around, and Senator John Glenn's agreed to be the narrator.
Mm-hmm. All right, 614-292-8513. We have an open line for you to talk with the management and musicians from the Columbus Symphony. Denise is here. Hi, Denise.
Hello.
Yes.
It's actually Therese.
Therese, thank you.
I worked for the symphony back in the early 1980s. I was doing public relations for them for a few years, but I miss the sense of everyone working together that they had back then. In the ensuing 25 years or so, there's been stress after stress, various problems, music directors who are temperamental, then problems with board members and union problems and all this. And I miss the time when everyone trusted each other and worked together, such as they were doing the early 1980s when I worked there. The fact of everyone just pulling together. Mm-hmm. I was glad that the Dispatch said in their editorial that they were glad the symphony was back, but I disagreed with the fact that they said something about becoming a major orchestra. This has been a major orchestra for years now. They have certainly been the equal, if not surpassed, the level of the Cincinnati Symphony, and they have been going onward and upward, and I have found no fault with the musicianship of this orchestra, and I have been so delighted with how they have developed and become really a truly great orchestra, and I would be very sad to see that go into eclipse. They have done nothing wrong through the years. They're not making as much as the Cincinnati or the Cleveland Orchestra, and they are every bit as a major orchestra, and they should be compensated accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, I just feel that that's one thing that hasn't been said, because the budget problems have to do with fundraising problems and have to do with marketing problems, and none of those have been in any way the musicians' fault. They have been up to the mark for years now.
Okay, Therese, thanks for your statement. Any comments from anybody on the panel? Sure. Are you better than the Cincinnati Symphony, as Therese
suggests?
Yes,
they are.
They are. You're going to say that, Tony, on public record. Better than the Cincinnati Symphony. That could be a marketing slogan. Right?
I mean, in this country, those orchestras that are the most successful, if you study them carefully, have periods of disagreement. But for the most part, the management, the board, and the musicians are in agreement and walking on the same path in the same direction. And it has to start there first. When you have that kernel of solidity, then you can build audience base. Then you can build a donor base. And so I agree with Theresa that we need to strive for that as a primary goal. It really starts first with us. You know, when we're together, when we agree on where we're going, and part of our new agreement is to bring in a consultant to help us develop a strategic plan. Once we're going in the right direction that we all agree on, we have the greatest chance of succeeding in Central Ohio. And so I agree with her that we need to return to that time, because that's our best chance for building a successful future.
Given some of the discord in the public statements in the past couple of months, is there trust now between musicians and management? What's the level of trust?
Well, it's still we have to build it from this point. I mean, obviously we've come through a very long period of strife, and so initially we have to build a piece and make it grow and strengthen, and then eventually walk on the same path in the same direction.
Yeah, Fred, I would echo what Doug is saying, really, across the board, and I appreciate Teresa's comments and concerns. I think, one of the byproducts of financial strain, and it really there has clearly been cyclical financial strain here, is stress on relationships. It is hard on everybody. It's hard on donors. It's hard on the community. It's hard on the musicians. It's hard on the board. It's hard on management. And one of the goals of trying to establish a fundamental, financially sustainable base is to shake us free of that of that strain and stress, and let us be strained and stressed over other things, like how to grow the size of the orchestra, how to grow the length of the season, how to change the repertoire. But I think there is tremendous commitment on everybody who's been among everyone who's been involved in this process to try and to work together. We need to change the culture of the way we work together. That's important to me. It's important to Tony. I know it's important to the musicians. Apologize for a long answer, but when I think it was Gordon talked about the ethereal notion of the orchestra community. Well, It's not ethereal. It's real. There are many segments to it. And the single most disappointing piece of this whole process to me was the extent to which there was so much finger pointing.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is that we all have actually the same goal. We want a great orchestra. I wouldn't hesitate to say that I want a well-paid orchestra. I absolutely believe that there's a relationship between compensation and talent, and that talent should be rewarded. So I think hopefully we can put all of that behind us and move forward together. We can't do this divided. That we will fail if we don't heal these divisions.
Next caller here is Jan. Hello, Jan.
Good morning. I just have a question for all concerned with the fact that we've gotten a lot of negative publicity in the Dispatch, as well as around the country and around the world. So what consideration is being given to who will come and want to be a member of our orchestra?
Well,
as far as the audition process, I assume she's...
Yes.
That's yet to be seen. I guess with any time there's a bruise on a city, it's going to potentially be a slow heal. So we'll literally have to wait and see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of unknowns there in terms of not only musicians, but some guest artists and conductors that may not want to be conducting here in the immediate present. But I think that's our opportunity to quickly reestablish our track record. And by the way, to go back to the quality of the orchestra. Lest we sound like cheerleaders, there's never been a conductor or a soloist who's come in the two seasons I've been here that has either been very surprised because they'd never been conducted here before or put it at the top of their list to pay a visit at Columbus as the opportunity permits because the orchestra is so great.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jan, do you have a follow-up question here?
I'm not questioning the quality of the orchestra. I've been a season supporter since 1969. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Jan, thanks for your call. Kathy is next. Hello, Kathy.
Hi. Hi, I just wanted to make a comment about how I do understand that when you're in negotiations that a lot of this factioning will take place and people will be defensive and there'll be a lot of bruised egos and, the reality of it is what our economic situation is. My husband is the director of the ballet company here and I know the strain that it is taking on the administration to keep this company going. And our company is right now at the Joyce Theater in New York and had a spectacular opening. And that's, in the end, what we're all trying to achieve is that their product, they as an arts organization, will shine. But it's not going to happen by blaming anybody. It's going to happen by everybody coming together. And that's what I think we've discovered at the Ballet.
Mm-hmm. Comments from our panel here. Agreement. Huh?
Well said.
Well said. Okay. Kathy, thanks for your call.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And we're next year with Bruce. Bruce, you're on the air.
Good morning. First of all, I am a supporter of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra, and I travel quite a bit. And one comment is I didn't pick up, I don't know, I'm on several boards here. And I know we have a give or get, whether it could be 5,000 or 50 or 100,000. And I also think that I remember reading an article in the Dispatch and said a lot of the board members aren't seasoned subscribers. I think you have to lead by example. And also, I think the marketing and the performances, it's, everything seems quite dated, and especially with Picnic with the Pops. I mean, you tend to get to C or D list artists that have no one's heard of for quite a bit. But I do think that it's the most important thing you should do, give or get. And you have a large board. And, if they can't give or if they can't get their friends to give a certain amount of money, they should not be on the board. Mm. And I'll take my answers off the air.
Okay, well, a variety of comments by our caller. Any answers to any of them?
Well, there was a lot there. We do have a give or get. I'm not sure that it's something I ought to be, it's not a, I don't think exactly what it is, but it's substantial. And among the things reported in the Dispatch was that we have, for the last several years, had 100% participation in terms of giving by our board members. I think statistically, if you look at the level of individual giving as a percentage of the orchestra's budget in Columbus, it compares well with other cities. In fact, it compares very well with other cities. And as Doug mentioned earlier, the one area where we fall down happens to be endowment and to some extent the level of government support. Those are the two principal areas where If you look at our sources of contributed revenue, that's where we're short. We're not short on a percentage basis in the corporate support, and we're not short in individual support. The with respect to whether all of the board members ought to subscribe, I clearly think that would be ideal. I'm certainly a subscriber and I enjoy it. But I think you need to recognize that it's helpful actually to have some members on the board who may not be regular subscribers. For example, we have some board members who are younger and have small children, and they aren't always, for them, a 10 or 12 performance subscription package may not make the most sense. They certainly buy single tickets and they certainly attend concerts. But so a great many of our board members are subscribers. I don't personally think it's critical that every single one of them be a subscriber. I think it is important that they care about the music, and I think all of them do.
And hello, Bruce. You're on the air. Bruce, are you with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yes, but I do think, like I said, I know from being on other boards, it's important that you lead by example. And I've seen many board members here even show up like in just, I don't think this is a thing, but I've seen several board members that I know that just show up in jeans and almost a T-shirt or something. And then you see these young kids come and they're in suits and they try to look nice and they're trying to do something important. Then you see some of the leaders in your board and they just look like peasants off the street. And then I do think that your programming, marketing, and your advertising is so dated. I mean, just go to Naples, Florida and listen. They have a wonderful young symphony, and they have programs and stuff going on every week, and it's just so exciting.
Well, okay. Bruce, objections noted or opinions noted. And is it Myra? I'm not sure of the name here. Hi, how are you? Caller, are you with us? Apparently not. Let us go here to Debbie. Hello, Debbie.
Yes, we were season ticket holders for about 10 years for the Pop series. And the last 3 years, there were so many repeat guest artists that the last year of the Pop series, the last year of the symphony, we opted not to become season ticket holders because we'd seen it all before. And I was wondering why that was, and perhaps that might have been a reason for the unpopularity of the series.
Well, in general, the artists that come and play with the Pops or with any orchestra are those that, first of all, are comfortable being in front of an orchestra and who have music arranged to perform with an orchestra, and that universe is ever shrinking. And if you have six slots and availabilities to have your audience attendance goals and all those sorts of good things, you have to be very selective in who comes. And it's my premise that you shouldn't see anybody more than once every 3 or 4 years anyway, but we are hard pressed to find people in the price range that we need to have in order to make it financially viable, and as I say, are used to and are willing to work with orchestras. It's difficult to find those people, and we don't have the old TV variety show system where people would recognize artists and acts from television and then welcome them when they became on stage live. That's an important component that we overlook if you're in my business. Mm-hmm. We don't have that opportunity now.
Okay, Debbie, thanks for your call. We just have about a minute left. So we're moving forward here and restoring a culture of cooperation, and everybody's at least satisfied that that's where we're going, right?
Fred, I think you'll see us taking a number of steps to move forward, and quite frankly, I think there's symbolic and real significance in the fact that the four of us are sitting together with you when we were here
last time you were separate, and everybody insisted on being separate.
We each had our own half an hour last time, mm-hmm. I looked forward this morning to joining Doug and Jim.
Okay, Buzz Trafford, Chair of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra Board of Trustees, Tony Beadle, Executive Director, Doug Fisher, Second Bassoon, and President of the Central Ohio Federation of Musicians, Local 103, Jim Akins, Principal Tuba, Chair of the Orchestra. Thank you all for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear about the health care proposals of the candidates John McCain and Barack Obama with representatives of their campaign. On listener-supported WOSU, WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 is NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from the Columbus Metropolitan Club, where you can be part of a live discussion at weekly luncheons. More information is available at www.columbusmetroclub.org.